welcome to our latest edition of the rebranded Charity Pulse, which is sort of keeping your finger on the pulse of the issues affecting the sectors. I'm joined once again by my fellow chatters, Catherine Ross-Jomgee from Shakespeare Martineau and James Saunders from More Kingston Smith. Welcome, guys. Hope you're both well. So lots going on in the sector over the last few weeks. So we've had the announcement of the new CEO for the Charity Commission, David Holdsworth, who joins on the 1st of July. I have to say I haven't come across him. Have either of you?
No.
Has been at the Commission before? No. Charity Commission has published its five-year strategy. I don't know whether either of you had an opportunity to take a look at that.
I skimmed it. The headline was maybe more exciting than the reality. I thought that the commission wouldn't be misused or weaponized. Oh gosh, what's going on? But I think that was more just, you know, the argument back to we're not here to be used by politicians or others in these culture wars or any other disputes. So I thought that was quite useful to see the commission asserting its independence and its particular role.
Yeah, I think, you know, certainly the change of language since Orlando has taken over a chair, I think, has been much more about being an effective regulator rather than beating up sectors. So, I think that should be encouraged. And one of the things I noticed they also is talking about embracing technological innovation and strengthen the use of data, which I think is a really key area, particularly the use of data. I think they could be using more of that. So the other thing I spotted was Charity Commission is assessing concerns about an Essex charity called Community 360 that loaned its chief executor over £200,000 last year. Now, when is it acceptable to loan somebody money from a charity? There we are. James, do you want to kick off on this one?
Well, we just don't know in this case. I mean, that's the big problem with this one is, you know, I've looked at the accounts where a lot of these, you know, related party transactions are supposed to be disclosed. The, you know, in my world of accounting and auditing, and financial statements, the charity sort, which is the guidance for how charities prepare their accounts, says related party transactions are enormously important and enough information should be put in the accounts that users can see what's going on and that, importantly, charity money is being used for the benefit of the charity and its beneficiaries. Now, as you alluded to, Charles, how... lending the CEO £200,000 for who knows what the right use of charity money? You can't possibly tell from the accounts. You know, when you look at the numbers, the CEO was paid £60,000. But if they're the leading or the highest key management personnel there, the husband and wife, the CEO and her husband were paid another £106,000, and then on top of that there was a £206,000 loan as well. I mean, how much money needs to go to one person? And there is no disclosure in the accounts about why this is. I mean, there is a limited narrative about conflicts of interests, but there's no way of knowing it. And clearly the accounts are remiss in not disclosing you know, enough information for the informed user to understand whether these related party transactions are at arm's length and in the charity's best interests or not.
Yeah. That's, I mean, good. I think if this was me, I'd be talking to clients and saying, how is this going to look? The optics don't look great. And the fact they haven't explained it fully in the account, so it doesn't give them any backup. And alarm bells for me was that, you know, the commission said they'd engaged with this charity previously regarding conflicts of interest and related party transactions. And so to see this and trying to work out what's the possible interest rate, I was looking at this from the trustees saying, if your duty is to maximise the charity's assets, how is making a loan to the chief exec on what seems to be a low interest rate, how is that in the charity's best interest? It just doesn't seem to stack up in terms of motivation and what their actual legal duties are, rather than, you know, some sort of family connection that feels too close.
The loan, it seems, has really triggered the extra attention this year. Because if you look back over the previous sets of accounts, I mean, the Charity Commission goes back five sets of accounts, those CEO transactions have always been there. The paying and the transactions with the related party, i.e. the building services. Now, there is the begin that you know there are the beginnings of an explanation in the accounts about it the building services were contracted by the trustees, so they're starting to say, well, these, you know, there is a suggestion that with they understand it should be at arm's length, and but you know that's it. There's so much more, and clearly you can see where the Charity Commission has talked to them before about it, because there is such a large amount of transaction going on with related parties to the CEO.
Yeah, I have to say I was slightly surprised. I mean, the CEO has been in place since 1992. You know, they've obviously
it's also Charles, where you've got to start wondering whether there's this de facto trustee role. You know, I mean, is the CEO actually more powerful than the trustees in this case? You know, there is an open question there. If the CEO has been there since 1993, trustees rotate every, let's say, 5, maximum 10 years, maybe. You know, there's a definite question about where the power lies here.
I mean, just on every level, I just don't think, you know, lending any member of staff £200,000 from a charity can possibly be acceptable. I mean, you know, maybe we'll be proven wrong, but I just can't think of any circumstance. You know, you could understand it from a loan for your travel, which is perfectly legitimate, or stuff like that. But, you know, you're talking there, the maximum is what, £7,500 or £10,000 or whatever it may be. But that's a legitimate thing of getting people into work. But £200,000?
Yeah.
I've struggled with that, particularly as the Charity Commission had already engaged over conflicts of interest, as you've said. Yeah. But I mean, the trustee statement was, you know, quite bland, which I suppose is not that surprising in the press, was where any issues of potential or actual conflicts of interest raised in our organisations, we take this matter very seriously. Well, they may take it very seriously, but I'm still struggling to understand how they could possibly have agreed to that.
Yeah.
No, absolutely. So the other thing I spotted was takeovers. I think they were Eastside Primetime, as they're now called, Eastside People, aren't they? Do a report every year, and now mergers are at an all-time low since they started the survey in 2013-14 at 48. I don't think that really comes as much a surprise, does it?
No, and I just, well, obviously as a lawyer, I'd nitpick, wouldn't I? But, you know, I just take issue with what's a takeover, what's a merger? Is good merger just because it's charities, or is there a possibility we can have a bad merger? You know, I just thought, to me, that information looks flawed, because you can easily merge charities without anyone externally necessarily being able to identify that. There are all sorts of different ways that charities can legally merge, that they might want to keep separate brands, they might want to operate in different ways. So we've said this before, I mean, a full-blown merger, as in, you know, completely taking over and closing down the previous charity, takes a lot of time, a lot of money, and isn't always a greater efficiency at the end of it. So I think it's sensible at times that we haven't got a huge amount of mergers going on, because arguably that could be wasted charitable funds. So I just didn't quite dive into these figures are gospel.
Yeah, I the problem is it's always predicated, isn't it, on there too many charities and too many charities doing the same thing.
Yeah,
I have to say, having been through a merger myself, I would never do it again as a trustee. I mean, it was, and you know, it was two strong organisations coming together, and both boards of trustees. But you know, even 3 or 4 years down the line, we're still dealing with issues that have come out of the merger with the best will. So the next thing I picked up was around charities subsidising public services to the tune of 2.4 billion, which is research from New Philanthropy Capital. I have to say, it's not new about the subsidy, but the size of the quantum of it, I think, is quite alarming.
Absolutely. It's good that they can put a number on it, isn't it? Really, yeah. It only, as you said, Charles, it supports what everyone's been saying for a long time, that more and more is being lumped onto the charity sector, and they're trying, they need to do more with less. So yeah, it only supports that, I think.
And I think the publicity around it, you know, we've talked about this, we know this is the case, but actually to have the quantum, as you say, Charles, but also the comment here that 2.4 billion is more than half the size of the government's levelling up fund. Well, we never stop hearing about this levelling up fund. We don't hear about this. And I think when we've got MPs criticising charities, misunderstanding how charities operate, how they're funded, how they're governed, you know, they should be looking into this report to actually understand how they are not funding crucial services that people believe the state are paying for, and they're not.
But politically, it suits their book, doesn't it? I don't care which side of party you are, to pay as little as possible and get charities to contribute. I mean, the number that the MPC came up with was that on the average, charities funding 35% of each contract, which is an extraordinarily high number. The one issue, I suppose, that you have to take into account is, I think about the hospice movement. You know, if it didn't exist, what would happen? Well, the NHS would provide. But is the level of care provided by the hospice movement so much higher and better and everything else, which would be so do you think that is factored into this?
I'm not sure that it is, but again, I still, and we talked about this during lockdown and COVID when it first came out, you know, people talking about hospices and thinking the NHS fully finances them. No, they absolutely do not. But the general public doesn't understand, I think, where the NHS ends and where charity starts, actually. And I think, you know, there is that argument about, you know, would it be paid for by the NHS if they weren't there? I'm not sure that it would. And I'm not sure we'd be, you know, dying well, if that's the expression. But yeah.
No, I think that's probably right. And actually, we have seen, haven't we, from a number of larger charities actually handing back contracts to local authorities. Because I think this also ties up, doesn't it, into government funding of local authorities funding of charities. I must admit, I do hope the relationship between government and the sector and the way that government funds the sector changes, because it needs to change. It is a really inefficient, clunky
format. And Charles, at the moment, I think actually, if anything, it's going the other way, because I'm hearing that the councils and local governments are, rather than working with charities, they are changing the nature of their contracts surreptitiously, let's put it in a nice way, so that the service providers, the charities, can't give back contracts, and there's a bar on giving back contracts, or there are longer break periods or longer periods before the break period can come in before. And they're changing the legalities of the contracts because they've got this problem about everyone giving them back their money, giving them back their service contracts, rather.
Well, I have to say, we've got Matt Whitaker from Pro Bono Economics, who had a summit with the Labour Party. And I'll be very interesting to see whether, as part of their discussions, this came up. I'd be amazed if it didn't. Mm-hmm. And it'd see whether the wind is blowing in a different direction. If we had a change of government. I think it's difficult to know that, isn't it? And then the final thing I sort of spotted was about a name change for Hamish Ogston Foundation to, is it Vine Hill, I think?
Yeah,
and whether that untarnishes the charity's reputation. If you remember, we discussed this, I think, a few casts before. I don't know, Catherine, if you had a look at that.
Well, I thought this was a bit of a tough one because it's allegations, nothing is proven. And from the comment, it would appear to be historic allegations as well. So that kind of feels less pressing, less now. It's something that's happened. You can't do anything about it. If it results in charges and conviction, so be it. So for that reason, I kind of thought, well, okay, yeah, if they are changing the name, you know, he and his daughter are no longer trustees of it. They did found it, but a charity can change its name. And the change is complete, isn't it? You wouldn't spot from the outside that Vine Hill Trust is that particular charity in a new guise. So I could see why they've done it, but I did think it is slightly tough in the kind of court of, you know, public opinion, that you just the slightest allegation and that's it, you throw them under the bus. So, yeah.
Yeah, he's got to prove he's innocent, isn't he? He's guilty, mm-hmm. guilty by the Sunday Times last October's report on what happened. I mean, I don't know why the way, and the Metropolitan Police. And this is a problem, isn't it, with the timing of the disconnect between the police investigation. The Charity Commission's obviously got this on hold as a watching brief.
Yeah.
And then money that's been given, which is an irrevocable gift and must be used for the purpose of charity, And do we actually think, James, that it should just sit there doing nothing until this is resolved, or do you think actually it should be put to good use?
I mean, the story itself was, seemed to have two elements to it, which is the change of name, and then was it, and then the English Heritage paying back the donation in particular. I'm not quite sure whether they're saying it was linked or not, but it does smack of virtue signaling, really. I think that's what it seems to me, because you know, nothing's, as you said earlier, nothing's actually been proved. It's very much, we desperately don't want to be associated with anything that could even potentially be a scandal in the future, rather than actually something's gone wrong and we're reacting to something that has been confirmed. So that it feels like virtue signaling more than anything else, really.
But it's a very live issue. I've had four occasions now with different charities I'm involved with where we've discussed about whether we would accept a donation or not on the sort of, from a reputational point of view and moral grounds. And I have to say, it's a really challenging thing, because you're saying, actually, you're not going to take this money, therefore we can't spend it on what we were set up to do. And the people who are going to be harmed are actually our beneficiaries.
But if we go back to whether the you know, there is a conflict with the charity's purposes and the source of the donation, for example, like there's a link there. This doesn't. I mean, I don't think there's that link there directly. It's more about just generically. We're worried about scandal, potential possible scandal. I mean, you know, if it all gets found not guilty and there's no substance to it. You look a bit daft. I suspect, Charles, that when you've been having your discussions in, you know, that you talked about, just mentioned, I would have hoped there was a little bit more substance to the danger, if you like, than we're a bit worried about a scandal.
Most of it was actually about how tainted the money was, or potentially could be perceived as, and it divided the board very much so. Down the middle, and people have very strong opinions either way. Anyway, I think this is a really good time just to stop, because if people have got a view on this, maybe they could send us what their viewpoint is, and we can pick this up on another session that we've got for Charity ePulse. I'd just like to thank my fellow chatters, Catherine and James, once again, and just to let you know that we will be making this available as a podcast. Please do follow. Please click the subscribe button. And as I said, we welcome any comments or feedbacks, particularly on the last issue we've just discussed, because I think that's something that is going to carry on for some time.